Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 6:14 p.m. That is British summertime, and today is September 30th. Well, I thought I would kick off today with the dollar index. I should also mention, of course, that I've just flown into London, so a little bit jet lagged. Trying to get this get the recording done before I fall asleep, so I do apologize for recording before the US close. When we look at the dollar index, it is at a new closing high, and this is clearly an example of potentially at least the mundane pace of the advance now starting to pick up traction. The first area of potential resistance is going to be around the 100 level. I think everyone is quite cognizant of the fact that the dollar index has pulled back from the 100 level on multiple occasions since 2015. It wasn't quite able to sustain the move above that level in 2016-17. But it's also worth considering that there is a lot of trading that has been put in below this level. And in the absence of a very clear downward dynamic, similar to the failures we saw at 100 previously, then we would really have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Now, the continued strength of the dollar is something that is, I think, very meaningful in terms of the total of central bank sitting on central bank balance sheets. Because it's denominated in dollars. And when you have the dollar strengthening, then that reduces the quantity of money sitting on the balance sheets of the ECB, the Bank of England, the Bank of Japan, the People's Bank of China. So that measure is right down on the lows we saw all the way back in May, and it's been contracting in a lockstep with the continued advance in the dollar. This is also a good example, or I think a useful barometer for thinking about the short dollar phenomenon that we have out there in the global market. And of course, what's happening in China is, I think, one of the consequences of that short dollar trade. For example, the A-share index remains under pressure, and it's now right in the region of the trend mean. When we look at the NASDAQ Golden Dragon Index, then that is an index of US-listed Chinese companies. It was in positive territory today, but it has been a serial underperformer for most of this year. The Continuous Commodity Index was pulling back from the region of the trend mean over the last few days. It really does need a very clear upward dynamic and sustained move above 400 to confirm that we are back in a demand-dominated environment beyond the short term. The consistency of that sequence of lower rally highs over the course of the last 18 months is also representative of the slowdown in China and the fact that there are a significant number of US dollar borrowers in the emerging markets. In the space of just 18 months, China went from zero to about $450 billion worth of US dollar denominated debt before it was banned by the central government. Again, that's another example of the just the leverage and appetite for credit that the Chinese economy has, and it is laboring at the moment in primarily because the central government doesn't want to inflate a bubble. Now, when we think about the outlook for the S&P 500, it's in positive territory today. It's been ranging in a very calm manner for most of the last month. This is within just less than 100 points of the all-time peak. This entire range over the last 6 months looks like a bullish consolidation. I do think that the most likely scenario is we are going to get another leg on the upside. I think I'm on the record saying on a number of occasions that I think the closest parallel that we have is with 1998, We also had an inverted yield curve back then. One of the most important lessons from an inverted yield curve is that there is always an argument about whether it is a useful indicator on this particular occasion. There's always an argument saying that the markets today are different and that it's no longer applicable. That view tends to gain credence because it's quite normal for a significant rally to occur in stock markets after the first inversion. It's usually by the time everybody has forgotten about the inversion that it starts to really have an impact. And the clearest signal that we have from an inverted yield curve is when the spread starts to expand once more. I think it's worth going back and looking at the fact that we had a small inversion in 1998, but it wasn't really until 2000, when the spread started spiking higher, that we really had evidence of a contraction going on in the economy. And I think that's certainly a factor when we think about the analysis of the yield curve. That's also a point that Jeff Gundlach has been making. Now, when we then think about if we've had strength in the stock market and strength in the dollar, that is weighing on precious metals. Writing a little bit in here today about measured moves and the fact that we had an 18% move higher in the initial breakout in gold back in 2001. On this occasion, it was 15%. Back then, it retraced the entire advance, pulled all the way back to the trend mean. So we have to at least give some credence to the view that we could get a deeper period of consolidation. But of course, if we're going to continue to use that measured move rationale, it certainly has been quite reliable over the course of the last 4 years. Well, then we also would have to consider that the price of gold went up 5 times in the period after the breakout. And I think that's one of the most convincing arguments for a five-digit price for gold. Now, that's obviously going to be 10 years from now. It would have to be some rather deleterious effect on the global economy, and most particularly in view of the potential for modern monetary theory to be deployed in more than a few countries, massive money printing, is not at all beyond the bounds of possibility in the eventuality that we do get another a recession. And if we then think about the yield curve spread, well, it is a lead indicator of anything from 6 to 18 months. That does bring us up to the next US election. The sector that is under most pressure right now from speculation about the what kind of policy issues are going to animate the population in that election is the biotechnology sector. We have this very clear rounding characteristic over the course of the last 3 years. It's now coming all the way back down to test the lower side of its range. And it is in positive territory today, but it's got to do more than that. It really does have to break the sequence of lower rally highs to confirm a return to demand dominance here. Now, that is obviously creating some stress, or the fact that the Democrats in particular are targeting drug pricing. The Republicans are less about drug pricing and more about trying to reform some of the pricing mechanisms for Medicare. But in one way or another, this is looking like a rather difficult environment for the biotechnology sector. There is the additional point that technology has historically always been considered to be cyclical. The major companies that represent the technology sector today are not quite as cyclical as they used to be. Microsoft has ironed out the cyclicality of its earnings by adopting a subscription business model. It's the same kind of thing for Amazon and Google. Biotechnology, on the other hand, is very highly cyclical. They're very dependent on the next new drug coming out. And the fact that it is rolling over does suggest we are in the latter stages of this bull market. When we think about the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index, it looks increasingly likely that we're getting some rotation going on in here. And that index was in positive territory, and it is still very proximate to the peaks put in earlier on this year, and it continues to look like a bullish consolidation. But when, for example, we look under the hood at some of the constituents, well, Micron Technology, for example, pulled back very sharply on disappointing guidance last week. But if we look at, for example, Samsung Electronics, then it is benefiting from the weakness of the yuan and its dominant position in NAND, DRAM production. And then, of course, it has got the potential for 5G phones to start to leverage the price on the upside. And, of course, they are getting over the boardroom scandal that rocked the share in 2018. Does look like we're going to see additional upside, having seen that range completed. Taiwan Semiconductor has been ranging for the better part of 3 years, and yet it is also the world leader in, it has a something approaching a 90% market share for 7-nanometer chips, and it is on the cusp of delivering 5-nanometer chips. That's reason enough to think that this rounding characteristic this time on the ups with an upward bias is going to contribute to another leg higher in the share. Well, obviously, they are also benefiting from the weakness of some of these Asian currencies. The Chinese renminbi was at a new low in here, or it was weaker again in here today. The Korean won has weakened from 1050 to 1200 over the course of the last 18 months, and the Taiwan dollar, I'm just waiting for the chart to come up here, has weakened from 29 to 31 over the same period and is now testing the region of the trend mean, and it looks quite unlikely that it's going to strengthen through that level. The biggest moves that we saw in the precious metal markets today was not really in gold, but rather in the rather deep pullback we've seen in silver and also in platinum. And that does suggest that we are going to see a retracement all the way back down to the region of the trend mean. This was a big move in platinum today. Now, I think one of the things that is worth commenting on is that precious metals in particular are best bought following these occasional sharp pullbacks. And that suggests that we are being set up for the next favorable entry opportunity. They are prone to overextending on both the upside and the downside. And historically, particularly in the early part of the trends for precious metals in the early 2000s, it was buying the dips was by far the easiest way of profiting from the sector. Then when we think about the oil price, you had the Saudi Arabian energy minister in here today saying that a war with Iran would cause a global recession, which suggests that they're not quite ready for it yet. So the price was down an additional dollar in here. Nonetheless, it looks increasingly likely that there is going to be increasing conflict in the region, and the fact that the ceasefire with the Houthis is on hold following the capturing of a significant number of Saudi personnel immediately after the last ceasefire was announced. Well, that suggests that we are still in an uncertain environment, but the fact of the matter is there's just plenty of the stuff around. And it would require a very meaningful catalyst to see prices move higher from here. And I think with that, I'm going to leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.